Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the live episode of Ophthalmology Off the Grid. We are here at Millennial Eye in Austin, Texas, and are really excited about the opportunity that we have today to bring in someone who is so courageous and is with in his homeland that all of us are supporting and behind, and is doing some really unique things to support the efforts in Ukraine. And we talk about, you know, the name of this podcast is Ophthalmology Off the Grid. And I don't think we've ever been more off the grid than to be in Ukraine, you know, with Russians invading and listening to this man's story really moved me. And I wanted to kind of share it with all of you. So I'm bringing in now live from Ukraine, Dr. Andrei Kovalov. Andrei, how are you?
Hi, how are you?
Well, I'm safe and sound here in Austin, Texas. I'm more concerned about you guys. You know, can you just tell us a little bit? We'll get into you and your background, but just right this moment, how are things where you are? Where are you located in Ukraine, and where are you physically? Are you in your home? Are you at your office? Or, you know, what's going on right this moment in Ukraine?
Right now, and from the very first day of the Russian invasions, we are in our home. We're staying in Kiev. We're in center of Kiev. We are staying in our flat. You can see by background, I'm sitting in in my desk room. And both of our sons are in military service right now, both of them. The oldest one, older one, he's a doctor. He's serving as a doctor. The younger one, he's a medical student, the last year of medical student in Kiev Medical Institute. And from the first hours of the invasion, he joined as a volunteer, and now he's in the army service as a paramedic. He's in the very hot spot. I will not expose the exact location, but he's in active army. My wife, Oksana, and me, we were doctors, ophthalmologists with the 40 years of experience in ophthalmology. And we joined Kiev Civil Defense the same first day. But we are in reserve because we are over 60. And nowadays, they are still keeping us as a reserve. We are doing our best to support our civil defense, our army, our sons. We are trying to raise some money support. We are investing our money in support in We did already two big deliveries to the troops of medical support, of many, let's say, even daily things like toothpaste, like underwear, like t-shirts, and so on and so on. So many things the guys in the fields need.
Yeah. And I want to get into that in a little bit, because I want to make sure everybody here at this conference and everyone that's going to be streaming this podcast after knows how they can assist you. Before I do that, you and your wife are both practicing ophthalmologists. Where were you practicing? Or can you tell me a little bit about your practice? And were you in Kyiv, or were you in a different town in Ukraine? I'm just curious about where you guys, you know, were practicing before and what life was like in January, you know, before the invasion.
Let's say I don't want to give the long story, but as you can understand, 40 years of experience. We both of us, we are PhD, MD, and PhD. We had our dissertation degree. We have actually both of us are from Odessa City. We graduated from Odessa Medical University. And we have started our career, it was long ago, and it was still Soviet Union, but we have started it in one of the famous institutes, Filatov Eye Institute in Odessa, the one that was formed at the let's say the pre-World War II era by academician Filatov. So both of us, we did a dissertation degree there. And then I worked for 2 years in Wilmer Eye Institute in Johns Hopkins Hospital in Baltimore, being invited by Edward Momeny. I hope you do know this great guy.
Yeah.
And I got a lot from working there. And then it happened that we had to move after the disintegration of the Soviet Union. We had to move out. We spent nearly 15 years working in different countries in Africa, in Saudi Arabia, in Bahrain. And then 2002, we returned back to Ukraine, and 2005, together with our partners from the States, we have started a private medical center, and we're very successful. Up to now, we're working there. It's Ilaz Medical Center, one of the biggest ophthalmological center in Ukraine. Let's say now we have our staff over 100 persons, and we have 24 doctors, ophthalmologists in our staff, and we're doing everything but corneal transplantation, because corneal transplantation, according to Ukrainian regulations, it needs special permissions, and we planned to start it, let's say, this autumn, because we got all the permissions and we wanted to start corneal transplantation. My particular, let's say, field, I was in vitreoretinal service for about 15 years, but later I transferred back to refractive surgery, laser refractive surgery, phakic lens implantation, all these kind of anterior segment surgery, cataract, glaucoma, and so on.
Yeah, and that's what I was struck by is you know, you and I have very similar practice setups, and you know, a number of employees, a number of doctors, and we both do refractive. You know, your centers now, though, can you kind of take me through? You know, the invasion started February 24. So did y'all stop seeing patients that day, or was it, you know, when did y'all, or are y'all still seeing, like, I'm guessing you're not seeing routine patients anymore, but people are, you know, or some people are gone.
Not anymore. Let's say we had the operation day, the day before the invasion, and sure, we're still seeing our patients post-op, or somebody who is in need of help, but according to the regulations from the Ministry of Health, all the hospitals that had the facility to do emergency have to be transferred from routine service to emergency, and all planned surgery had to be postponed.
Yeah.
So now, and thanks God, we have very good OR facilities. We have three OR operating rooms. We had the entire floor. It's over 1,000 square meters. We have our operating theaters there. We have very good facility. We have lamellar flow of sterile air in our rooms. So we have very good facilities. And now we are working 24/7 as emergency service for injured people in Kyiv area.
So you're no longer doing, you know, routine eye care at this point. You're actually become a trauma center, and you guys are doing surgeries for.
We're doing routine, not routine, because you see we are in state of war, so. Routine eye service, like dry eye, are done by the consultations. Let's say we are doing a lot of online and telephone consultations. We have a special team who are dealing with this. The patients who need to be seen, yes, they are invited and they can come and to be seen. But yes, we are working mainly as a trauma center.
Okay. And are you yourself having to go do, you know, trauma surgeries in parts of the body that you haven't spent much time in? I mean, I imagine that, you know, doctors are practicing full scope, surgeons are practicing full scope. Are you having to do non-ophthalmic surgeries at this point?
Oh, no, not okay. Like this. Maybe I didn't expose the entire story, let's say. Our center, we are the part of big center. It's pure 100% private. It's a city doctor center. And we have a good team of general surgeons, of traumatologists, of cardiac surgeons. Before war, they did a lot of plastic surgery, of cardiac surgery. They did even a transplantation of this valve and many things. ENT. Those teams are more occupied, but we are doing, yes, ophthalmological service, eye traumas, eyelid traumas, all these brow traumas or facial. Some of them we're doing with ENT together, or some we're doing, if it's pure ophthalmological area, we're doing it by ourselves.
I see. So it's more of a full-scale private hospital. Now your staff, yeah. What's happened to your staff? You said you had over 100 staff, or are some of them still there, still working, doing these trauma eye surgeries and seeing emergency patients, or have most of them had to leave the country? Does it depend if you're a female or male? Walk me through that.
I would say that it is more depending on the kids and the willingness of the doctors. Yes, some of them relocated themselves to Western Ukraine because of the kids. Some of them are in Eastern Europe. Some of them are even in Spain. But still we have a team, so we can do 24/7 service.
Yeah. Talk about why was it, you were talking on the pre-call, why was it important for you and your wife to stay? I mean, you mentioned y'all are in the reserves, so you could get called to fight at some point if it came to that, from what I understand. And, you know, your two sons, both of them doctors or doctors in training, have taken up arms, essentially. For people, I mean, that's, you know, for us to understand that in the United States, I think we understand the idea of it. You know, the U.S. was founded on that, and we're all about fighting for freedom. But you're really doing that right now with your family. So just kind of walk us through that, what that's like.
Can you imagine that somebody's trying to rep your wives, your daughters, and to kill your sons and your families, your parents, those who are, you know, near and dear for you? What would you do? And there is a safe place somewhere there. What would you do? Would you fight or would you stay?
Well, and, I'm from Louisiana, so I would arm myself and I would do exactly what you're doing.
I may answer you by, you know, that both our sons and our younger son, especially our youngest son, he's just 22. And he went as a volunteer first hours. Can you imagine my wife, how she reacted to this, his idea of going as a volunteer? And she asked him, do you really want to go to war? You're a doctor. And he had told, Mom, I don't want, but I have to. Moscovites have decided everything. They didn't ask me what to do, and I have to do what I have to do. That's it.
Yeah.
So, and what we have to do? Do we have to escape to some safe European country? All of our friends, all of our colleagues called us and emailed us and invited us. And they invited us not only to give us a shelter, but also to give us work so we can work and continue our practice in Prague, in Czech Republic, in Italy, in Spain, in Great Britain, in Greece. We had not 100, but at least a dozen of invitations. But we have decided we have to wait for our sons at home.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally understand that. It's just hard to, you never kind of can imagine what that situation's like until you're in it. So y'all are there. Can tell us about communicating with your sons? You know, here we are talking over the internet. So obviously there are communications in Ukraine. What are you hearing from your sons?
It's continuous. Sometimes they're it's interrupted, and sometimes they're, let's say, SMSing us that the electricity, we don't have the electricity supply, so I'm switching off my phone to save the battery. And but then everything is back. We have great teams that are working to try to support the infrastructures in spite that Putin and Russians are doing everything to destroy our cities. They're not fighting with Ukrainian army, they're fighting with the Ukrainian people. I think you have seen a lot in you have a lot of information about the casualties and what's going on with the civilians. You know that we had a lot of much more civilians died in this war that our people in military service, because they're bombing our cities. They're bombing they have destroyed over 60 hospitals already and maternity homes with the pregnant women there. And we have more than 100 kids killed already, and more than 200 of them injured, and we don't know how many of them will survive. So it's really, we're resisting, but it's really difficult. It's hard time, it's very hard. I would say we feel strong, we don't have any doubt that we will win. The problem is how many of our kids and our people have to die to defend our freedom. Not only freedom, but existing of our country and us as Ukraine nation. Because, you know, the Putin, he don't want any compromises. He want to destroy Ukraine, and he want us not to exist. That's it.
Yeah. And the difference between evil dictators that used to do that in the past and now is that now they're on front page news with cell phone recordings in real time. You can't do it in the dark. You know, 60, 70 years ago, you know, you could do things and whatever was in the paper, that's what people knew. But now it's you know, everyone has a cell phone and they can record, so that he's committing these atrocities in open air in public. And that's why I don't think this thing can go on much longer without NATO or the US or someone getting involved, because it's too real for us. We're seeing too much of it, right? They're not able to hide it because we're getting the real word from people like you on the ground. And so do you have a sense of that, or do you think this is going to be over in 2 weeks, 2 months, or 2 years? I mean, have you thought about that?
Support for this podcast comes from Bryn Mawr Communications. BMC produces a number of informative podcast series spanning a variety of topics in ophthalmology. Discover a new show at itube.net/podcasts.
Let's say it's very difficult to say. According to some of prognosis, it can last for about 2-3 weeks, but it's, to my opinion, it's too optimistic. I would say, unfortunately, most likely it's a few months, because, you know, Putin will not stop, and not there is no compromise he will accept. Either this war, you know, you cannot stop war. War cannot be stopped. It could be either won or lost. If you win, you win. If you lose, you lose. Okay? We have, we have this war. It didn't start February 24. Actually, it had started 2014, when Putin occupied Crimea Peninsula and the eastern part of Donbas and Lugansk. And this was the beginning of war. At those time, at 14, we have signed some kind of agreement. It was called Minsk Agreement because it was signed in the capital of Belarus, in Minsk. But it was not neither win, nor Putin, not we. So it was not a peaceful agreement. It was like the war, you know, on the pause. And they prepared for this war all those 8 years. They've been preparing themselves for this war. I think you have seen a lot about these exercises, military exercises that they did around our border. And then let's say they occupied Belarus, because now you know that their troops are coming they're attacking Ukraine, not only from Ukraine and Russian border, but they're attacking us from Belarus because they have occupied it. Yeah. And the same, if we'll put this war on pause right now, so it will mean that in few years it will restart, and he will learn from the mistakes he did now. And he did a lot of mistakes. Thank God. Thanks God. It is helping us to win. But if we will not finish with this stupidity, we will have another war in a few years again.
Yeah. So you feel, I mean, for having 8 years to prepare for a war, he's really done a shitty job. You guys are fighting very strong against that. And I think that things aren't going as well as he thought they would. But you don't think this is going to end until he's dead. I mean, basically, there needs to be a coup. Someone else needs to be in power, or else, even if this war stops in 2 months, 3 months, you think it's going to start back up?
Yeah, I think that either the Putin will have to die, or somehow to be, eliminated from power, or Russia have to disintegrate as a country to separate countries. And only this could be the end of this story, because Russia is part of Russian Empire, and unfortunately, up to now, the majority of Russians are still supporting Putin. You know that according to I don't know what's the exact name, when they're asking people about their opinion in the streets or by phone or something. So according to this,
a poll. Sorry? Yeah. A poll. It's called a poll. Yeah.
A poll. Yeah. According to this, the support of Putin increased in Russia after he started this war. It's craziness. It's something we cannot understand this.
It's because they don't have the information that you have. It's because It's their media controls what they see, you know. That
come on, come on. Everybody has internet. Yeah, and you, as you have told, we have internet, we have phones, we have everything now. If you're interested in knowing the truth, you can do it in a few clicks.
Okay. I thought their internet was like blocked or something, or they can only see certain...
right now, but it was not blocked 3 weeks ago and 3 years ago and 5 years ago. So they had the full access to information, but they're still thinking like empire, you know. And if you do remember this speech of Putin in Munich, he did it in, I think, 1986 or 1988. And in this speech, he have told that the biggest tragedy of the 20th century was the disintegration of the Soviet Union. Not World War I, not World War II, the disintegration of the Soviet Union, in his mind, is the biggest mistake and the biggest tragedy of 20th century. He wanted to have the revenge in the Cold War. The Soviet Union lost the Cold War, and now he wants to have a revenge. He wants to restore not only the Soviet Union, but the entire Russian Empire, including Poland and all Eastern Europe.
Yeah, he's a madman.
If we will lose in Ukraine, he will not stop in Ukraine. The next will be Baltic republics. The next will be Poland, Czech Republic, Slovenia, Bulgaria, and so on.
Yeah,
hopefully until La Manche.
Hopefully he'll be murdered, or there'll be a coup before that point, assassinated, you know. I want to say
regarding the Western countries, we are very grateful for our friends and all the support that you're giving for us. We're absolutely sure that you're, let's say, sharing with us all the intelligence information, and we're getting a lot of ammunition and support and medical support and humanitarian support and financial support from the Western country, from Americans, especially from the United States, from Great Britain, from our closest Poland and many countries. Sure, we're asking for more because we need more. But really, we don't believe that Americans or British soldiers will die in Ukraine, and we are not asking for this. We're asking to support us with more help, with more ammunition, with more medical support, and the rest we will do.
Yeah, to that end, I want you to speak about what you're doing specifically, providing free refractive surgery and things like that to people going to war. That's what I heard about you originally, you know, because the last thing that someone needs to think about when they're trying to go out and shoot the Russians or defend their family is a contact falls out or their glasses break. Can you talk about that initiative and how we can support you in that regard?
Yes, we are doing this. Unfortunately, we cannot do ICL implantation, fake. We're dealing with the star ICLs, but now we cannot get them from abroad because of the state of war. But we can do laser refractive surgery, and we're still doing it for some of our people. We're supplying them with the free contact lenses. If they are choosing to be with the contact lenses, sure, the glasses is not the best choice. Yes, some of them, we're discussing with them what they prefer. Some of them, we're giving them daily disposable lenses. And some of them, they're choosing to have these extended wear day-night lenses that they can wear for 30 days. And then we're not giving them for 30 days, we're advising them for 2 weeks, because still they are in the field, you know, it's not like being in regular city life. So we're choosing the changing the lenses in 2 weeks for them. Even some of them, they don't know how to do it by themselves. So they're coming to us and we're putting the lenses off, doing some treatment for cornea, doing some investigations, and in a few hours we're putting the new lens on, and they're going back to the front lines.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
To front lines.
So how can you, what's the best way for us sitting here in Texas and in the United States, what's the best way that we can support what you're doing? I saw some links that Greg had sent out, and certainly the team here at Millennial Eye Live is going to share those links either on the screen or via email. But is there a website or something that you feel confident and trust that we can kind of direct funds and other things to?
Actually, you have my full contact. You have my email. You have my phone. I have everything. I have WhatsApp. I have all this. I'm in Facebook, so you can find me in Facebook. So, if you're willing, or any of your doctors are willing to do some support, so we will be very grateful and very glad to have it. We have special funds of volunteers who are, I know that for some people in the West, especially, it's a bit sensitive whether you're supporting army or you're supporting civilians or something, but the group we're dealing with is a group of medical volunteers. So if you have heard their hospital years, it's from this medieval ages hospital years, who have been actually doctors treating knights who have been in crusaders. So we have the same name, and this is the medical team. So we're doing only with the medical goods, supporting our civilians and our army. Sure, we need more for army, some very special medical goods. And I think Greg had shared with you the list I have shared with him. But any donation, any help, so are more than welcome.
Yeah, and we'll make sure that we have those links as well as your contact information to everyone here. So just in the last minute or two, I just want to give you the floor, just a final word. You have, you know, a few hundred doctors here watching this live, and then we're going to stream it out to thousands afterwards to watch it on demand. I just want to kind of give you the last word, or what message you may have to those of us sort of watching.
First of all, once again, thanks for everybody who are with us and who are supporting us. I would say physically, financially, or mentally, or just praying for us, for the safety of our soldiers, of our sons, of our people who are in Ukraine, who are supporting people who are escaped from Ukraine, seeing some shelter in Europe or in the States. And believe that we are resisting, where we will not give up. We will do our best and we will win. The only question, how many of us will stay alive to restore our country? We have beautiful country. Ukraine is one of the best country with fantastic nature. We have everything. We have fields, we have cities, we have beaches, we have mountains, forests, whatever you can imagine, we do have. We have fantastic people. And actually, I hope that after our victory, we will restore our country. And I'm inviting all of you to visit our country. And I hope we will have fantastic meetings, scientific meetings, and we will have many, many interesting discussions. And we have a lot of connections with American ophthalmologists. We're using a lot of American technologies, actually. We were the first who have started orthokeratology in Ukraine. And we invented a lot of things, and we were looking ahead to invent a lot of new things after our victory. Thank you very much for support, and have a good luck and safe and peaceful sky above all of you.
Well, Dr. Kovalev, thank you so much. This has been inspirational talking to you, and I know that everybody here is praying for the safety of your family and your entire nation. So thank you for joining us on Off the Grid. Thanks.
Thank you.